thank you for joining me for another episode of my podcast, USNA Mid-Moms and More. Based on my book, A USNA Mom's Journal, Plebe Summer Through Commissioning and Beyond, What You Need to Know. My podcast and my blog offer information to equip and empower parents to navigate the USNA journey successfully. You can find my blog at usnamidmomsandmore.org. You will also find useful links and information, Life at Navy, about the 4 years at the Naval Academy and what to expect, and so much more. Today is an episode close to my heart because this mom that I'm going to speak with, and I will introduce her in a minute, is amazing. Not only has she served, but her husband has served. Her son is at the Naval Academy, and her family has a legacy of service in the Navy specifically. So I'm very excited about this, and we're going to address a couple topics that aren't kind of too popular, but I think they're important for parents to know about and to know that there's help and that there are resources. So Cabrina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because as I read the little bio you sent me, I was in awe. Like, your dad served in the Navy during Vietnam. And so your whole family has a history of service. Please tell us a little bit about that part of the story and then your family specifically.
Well, I joined the Navy to have something in common with my dad. Is the reason why I chose that branch. The Army was really wanting to get me at the beginning at school, because I scored really high at the ASVAB. But then I was like, oh, I don't know. I think I want to go to nursing school. And never once did they tell me anything about an academy. You're talking like 95, 94. Nobody really talked about it, I guess, to girls. And I waited until after getting my LPN and I needed money for school. So then I joined the Navy. Okay. I joined undesignated because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And Corpsman was closed at the time. They capped out on females. Like, it was like, oh, if you were a male, you can go, because the Marines, they would put you with the Marines, and they were like, well, but you can wait until the billets open, or you can join undesignated and we'll give you $4,000. And I'm like, oh, well, that sounds good. And I was in for it. I earned every bit of that $4,000. I got put on a carrier, and the only advice the recruiter gave me was, do you want to be below deck where you don't get to see the sunshine, or you want to be on the top where you get to see the sunshine? And I was like, I'll take the sun. Well, the fun thing about it was I was able to go from department to department and see what all the Navy had on the ship to do. I wasn't like tied down to exactly being in that particular position. It's good and it's bad, because you don't kind of get a chance to hone in on one, because you could take a test and then the billet could be closed after you get your results, and then you don't result it high enough, or you could result high enough but still not have that job because they're like, oh, it's closed.
Okay. You know, so if you enlist undesignated, then you're pretty much open to whatever you like that might be available,
right? But okay, you've got to get permission first, and it's a long, you got to be like, can I go here, and then you have to go through your chain of command and put in chits to be able to do it. So it was kind of hard.
Okay.
I got recruited to work for the ship's captain. That's where I kind of got a preview of the officers and stuff and started being able to understand and look around. That's when I saw the midshipman uniform. I'm like, I don't recognize that uniform. Well, who are they? You know, like, oh, they're midshipmen. I said, what does that mean? You know?
Right.
And so the officers explained all that stuff to me, and that's how I got exposed to it. Like, and I'm like, oh,
the Naval Academy. Oh, yeah. Nobody had talked to you about the Naval Academy.
No, not at all. I would have applied to all of them in high school if I would have known that I could have went that way and had everything, you know, paid for. I could have been in like a medical one for nursing and everything.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So what did you end up doing?
Well, I ended up doing my 4 years, and then met my husband on the ship. We got married, and he stayed in and became a CB. He was also undesignated. And then he finally got his CB. I eventually got storekeeper at the end of all of it, but he stayed in, I got out.
Okay.
And then he did about 12 years and then got injured on one of his tours and stuff. And, you know, we had little Carlos, who's at the academy.
So are either of you still in the Navy, or you're both out?
Well, we're both out now. I work for the VA, so that's what I'm doing now. I'm serving as a nurse with them.
If you don't mind, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your dad, because to me, it really touched my heart when you said that you joined the Navy because of your dad. So can you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, I wanted to have something in common, kind of like talk to him, because Vietnam vets don't really want to talk a lot about their service time and stuff. And he joined just before, because of where he lived, there wasn't any jobs. He had to have my grandmother like sign, because he joined at 17.
Okay.
And I want to say Vietnam happened shortly thereafter.
Okay.
And so we got some funny stories. He would tell me stuff. Like one time, he told me that because he was out to sea and he didn't write his mother, my grandmother sent a Red Cross message to the captain. And he said that was the worst thing that ever happened, because I got in so much trouble for not writing my mom. And I'm sitting there in the captain's quarters having to write a letter to her because she hadn't heard from him, because he just kind of went off. And I thought it was really neat to be able to, you know, talk to him about all those things. But he's still kind of closed off about, you know, wanting to use VA services, you know, and stuff, because, you know, I work at the VA and I'm like, come on, let's come get your service. Or I'm going to go to civilian doctors. I don't want to be up there with anybody else. And I think it has a lot to do with how they treated him when they came back.
Right.
So it opens up a little, but it's just hard getting him to really talk about most of that stuff.
And what was his MOS, or what was his job?
He was a gunny. He got to chief with the first 4 years because of how everything was going off with Vietnam. So he'd been a chief, like the youngest chief pretty much, like straight off the bat, like, because gunner's mates were, you know, very needed, you know, position.
Yeah.
So he'd been that, and ever since, I got to see some of his WOG pictures for the crossing overs and all sorts of stuff that what was really sad about is he was getting ready just to throw all this stuff away.
Oh, no.
Pictures and throw away. And I was like, no. And I'm like gathering up all that. I was like, you can't do that. I got to show the kids. And he still has some of his cruise books that he likes to show, you know, my son, and talk about stuff with him. So that gives him something to talk about too with him.
He's very much appreciated. Whenever I see a Vietnam vet, but they'll wear their Vietnam War caps, and I make a point to go over and talk to them and let them know they're appreciated. So please do let them know that. So you are a 2027 plebe parent. So your son had the opportunity to do what you were never told about. Or didn't find out, and your husband either, I guess. So how did your plebe learn about the Naval Academy?
I've been plotting it ever since I found out about midshipmen. I was like, let's see if you like this. And you know, this is, you can go here. And, you know, because he really wanted to, because my dad did talk to him about his service and some, you know. And then when they had to talk about veterans, you know, during school, I was showing him all the people who, you know, all of our pictures. And I said, but, you know, he said, I still want to go to college. I'm like, well, there's a college you can go to. There's a Navy college. There's an Army college, you know. And then that's how I was like, we're going to go this way versus like trying to go enlisted. Not that there's anything against enlisted, but it just seems like if you wanted a different avenue, they should at least, you know, let kids know about it.
Yes, definitely. I'm a BGO. I've been a BGO since 2014.
Yeah.
So whoever I run into that I think would be a wonderful candidate, I always speak to them, whether they fall under my guidance or not. I speak to them about the Naval Academy. And of course, as Navy parents, we wear Navy gear. Yeah. So it becomes very natural. How did your journey as a parent through the Naval Academy and as a military parent through the Naval Academy, how was it shaped by your prior experience in the Navy?
I think it's shaped a lot. I think because of me going through like 9/11 and being part of a big mixture of all of the officers and the things that it went on, I have a different perspective a little bit, I think, than someone who didn't get to go down the blue and gold pathway, is what they call it, where you would work on the other side and seeing the difference. I think if you were straight enlisted, it would be a little, I'm more apt to ask the questions and kind of know that he needs to be more assertive to make his connections. And I don't know if a true enlisted that's never worked in the blue and gold would know about that. So I have a little bit more of a background on how to get him to network, which is hard, I think, for some regular people to do. It's like, you really need to, you know, get with these guys, make, these are going to be your lifelong friends. You got to get in there and network and try to, you know, I think it gives me a big insight. My son says, sometimes he goes like, this is what officers do, not enlisted. And I said, well, let me just tell you, you know, like, especially like with the chief, I told him, I said, you let your chief run your division. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to help him if they have enlisted parents to kind of know how they treated the officers out of, the academy. Like, they tried running the division, didn't let the chief. And then it was the worst, you know, cruise they ever had because uh-huh. they didn't listen to their higher ranking, you know, chief petty officer, you know, and let him guide him because you're brand new. And so right. I think that gives him a leg up, having a parent who could tell him, hey, you're going to need to learn how to rely on your chief.
Yeah. Well, they need, which is one of the points of plebe summer, right? You have to learn how to follow before you learn how to lead.
Yeah, for sure.
Give up your self-interest for the interests of the group as a whole or for others before self. And it's funny that you mentioned that because my son, when he went on his cruise, and at the time it was right after plebe year, now it's after youngster year. So he went on his cruise and he was one of the Skittles. He was on the deck of the George Washington. And he said, Mom, I really admire these young men and women. They really know what they're doing. They were so patient with me. Even though I made a mistake, they would just show me and they would guide me. And I think that really gave him a great mindset for when he went out into the fleet.
Yeah.
Because he always carried that with him about their attitude. And I think it helped to make him a better leader. So the Naval Academy is great at giving those types of experiences, right? So your son is still a plebe.
Yes.
So he hasn't had the chance to go out to training, but he'll be doing that in a couple months.
Yeah, he said this summer. Yeah, he's looking forward to it. He's excited.
Yeah. So I look forward to hear all about what he learns from that. Yes. So yes. As you entered into plebe summer, you went into I-Day. How prepared did you feel to go through the USNA parent journey?
A little bit prepared. The website that I was part of really helped.
The Facebook page?
Yeah, it really did help because I was like, okay, so, you know, what do I need to do and bring, and, you know, what is it all about and how, you know, important it is. And being a Napster, because Carlos got to be a Napster, so we already kind of had some other parents that we were already bonded to from that particular summer in Rhode Island, so we had other connections that was telling us, you know, the things that we needed to do. So that really helped out. It wasn't like a total shock of everything.
From looking at what you've gone through so far in plebe year and your experience in the Navy, is there any advice that you would offer?
I'd say definitely. I like your book. So I think your book is is something that should be like given out once they get accepted, to be like, here, read this, because I was reading a lot of it going, gosh, I wish I'd had this book a long time ago, because you couldn't find anything. Like, I was looking for stuff to help him during school, like that, just to kind of give him some guidance on how to, you know, write the resume and submit all the stuff. So I really think that your book, if I would have had a lot sooner, would have been a big guidance to help me.
So an accumulation of everything that we learned, and I'm glad it's so helpful to parents. So you mentioned about networking for plebes and mids. Mentioned about listening to your chief or your master chief or your warrant officer, whoever, because they really know and they've been in place long enough that they really know what's going on. And that's kind of their job, right? To kind of mentor these young officers when they come through. So as you look back, and I think I know the answer, is there anything you would have done differently in pursuing your Navy career?
If I would have known the knowledge that I had shared with my son, I would have applied to the academies and been at the academies and would have probably been a Navy nurse, is what I think would have happened if I would have known. Because I enjoyed serving. I miss it sometimes, you know. That's the only thing I would change, is if I had the knowledge. I wish that the career counselors at the school would have, you know, shared the knowledge and not just said enlisted. They were pushing enlisted a lot.
Right.
But not once I never saw an officer come to school and speak to anyone.
As your plebe looks toward the horizon and plebe year ending, Is there any particular service community he's interested in? What major is he interested in choosing? Has he mentioned anything?
He told me he wanted to do surface warfare is what he was saying, and he liked the computer
cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's what he was mentioning.
Okay. Yeah, my son went through the second class to offer cybersecurity, and it was tough, but I think it's opened so many career doors for him, and that's a wonderful field. And he was also, my oldest was a surface warfare officer, and he was SWO/IP, so he was surface warfare, and then when he qualified for his SWOPIN, they automatically transferred him to information professionals. So he was able to do that cyber stuff. So that might be, I'm not sure if it's available anymore because now they have a straight route into cyber, I believe.
Yeah.
So early during plebe year, and this is one of the topics I wanted to address with you because you and I kind of are in similar boats. Early in plebe year, in my case, my daughter was actually, plebe year, she tore her ACL and your plebe underwent some medical testing. Can you briefly tell us about your experience with that? Because we don't really talk too much about the medical side of it necessarily. And I thank you for actually sharing your story.
I think it's important because if he wouldn't have had the screening, it would have been totally, I think, a disaster later on. Because after he had got his the EKG screening, then they told him he had Wolff Parkinson's White. And I was just
this screening is part of a medical checkup. Is it part of the ERT or is it?
It was just a medical checkup that they were having once they got into the plebe.
Okay.
And then once that, then they go and he had to have an ablation to go in and like burn out that extra electrical pathway, which was kind of like, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so young. But I started thinking about while he was an athlete, he had complained of certain things that.
Okay.
I was like, he could have died already, you know, because he was in these sports and talking about how he felt anxious and different things. And that was like a sign because just on a regular EKG, he was up in the 140s, 150s and didn't even seem like he was. But that's because he's so young.
Right.
Because this particular diagnosis, you have to be shocked back into rhythm. It's not a thing where anyone could do CPR at all.
Okay.
So it was, you know, he could have just randomly just died.
Okay.
And they wouldn't have known what to do.
Well, I know that you told me your story, and in a communication that I had from you, you mentioned that you and when this whole thing happened, we had connected, and and in any case, you had mentioned that you wanted to thank the mom that kind of worked toward getting this testing, and her name is Jennifer Carrillo, and she's joining us right now. And you had mentioned you wanted to thank her.
Yes. Without her, doing this, my son wouldn't be here.
Jennifer is here, and I'm sure there are going to be some very teary voices right now. I have a podcast with her that you can go back and listen to. But she lost her son, and because of that, she really worked toward and pushed for this testing.
Mm-hmm.
To become available, because literally a 12-second EKG can save a midshipman's life. So she'll be joining us in just a second. So they found this out. They were able to go in, do the procedure. How is he doing?
He's doing really good. They left a loop recorder like inside, like they want to, you know, see if he's having any more arrhythmias. And I think that stays in for about 3 years if he wants it, to kind of, you know, monitor and make sure. But I think because he was an athlete and they caught it, he's recovering very well because of that, you know. And I think that it would have just been a matter of time, something, you know, because he was complaining of some of the things, and he did have some I started reading back on it because I started getting paranoid as a nurse. I'm like, oh my gosh, and all these different things. You could have to have a pacemaker. You can have to have this, or you could die, you know, and just, you know, worrying myself to death about it. He's doing really good. He's gotten back to full service duty. The only problem was just he felt so bad not participating his, you know, plebe summer as much as he wanted to. But I told him that, you know, everyone should be, you know, encouraging, because you could have died, you know, during plebe summer, you know. It could have ended in
this was right at the beginning when he came in.
Right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Testing. Okay. I'm glad. And how did your training as a nurse, like, you didn't really put two and two together. You weren't able to.
We pushed them a lot, thinking, you know, they were like, just, you know, even though you feel it, just walk it off kind of thing. And I only, since he got diagnosed with this, I started thinking about the times, you know, he could have just, you know, died in his sleep, all sorts of things that they say that had happened to parents. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even known that that was what it was. And I'm trying, my, with him being diagnosed, I'm trying to talk to some of the coaches, especially for cross country or for high impact sports, that they need to, you know, just do an EKG on these kids for sports physicals to see, because kids could get diagnosed, you know, as young as 10, or, you know, I've seen 5. I mean, they could, you know, protect them now instead of sending them out and letting them just have these, you know, heart attacks on the, on the, you know, outside.
Do they test all the plebes, or is it?
Yes. Okay. They did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Well, I'm glad
there was some others that had gotten diagnosed too. Okay. But the people who were doing the testing couldn't tell, you know, personal, you can't tell, but they did say that there was at least, I want to say, 10 okay. out of his class. I don't know what they did about it, or, you know, what had happened, but, you know, that's quite significant.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. Well, thank you for sharing that story with us. As a parent having undergone that experience, what would you tell other Navy parents?
I'd say stay, because I felt more comfortable with him being under observation with the best doctors were there. Mm-hmm. And not come home until it was like, I'm sorry, you can't serve no more. Because right. there was a need for me to want to be like, come home. But I told him, I said, you're in the best place that you can be, as long as they say that you can get recovered. And I said, you don't need to come home, because I don't want you to be, you know, we live in a small town that doesn't have, you know, the doctors. We would be 40, 50 minutes away from somewhere. And I'd rather him be, you know, close by people who could help him.
Okay.
In a faster place, you know, and then I said, there's a chance that, you know, unless it went where he was no longer able to be there, kind of thing.
Right. And there she is. Hi, Jennifer.
All right. Hi.
So, Jennifer, this is Cabrina. And I wanted to get the two of you together because, Jennifer, I know the significance to you of working toward getting this testing in. And I'll let you tell Cabrina a little bit about your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I haven't heard her whole story and all of that, so I'll be anxious to get to listen to the whole podcast and kind of coming in on this end. But I can certainly tell you a little bit about me and my sons, actually all three of them. So I was very fortunate. I am very fortunate. I had three kids attending the United States Naval Academy at the same time. Duke and Dylan were twins, and they are in the class of 2022, and Jake in the class of 2023. And basically, our lives changed forever on February 8th, 2020. And it was, so, and you've heard this before, but, you know, my kids are big kids. We're not runners. We're not, they're athletes. Of course, they're athletes. They played, you know, Texas football and wrestled at state level, you know, all throughout high school. And were always athletic their entire lives, of course. And, but they weren't runners. And so every time it would come onto a PRT where, you know, all my kids were like, oh, I got to go run. And I used to just tell them, you just got to get through it. You just got to get through it. You know, you got to get through it. So whenever there was a PRT, you know, I'd always kind of be like that morning text, and I'm going, you know, you got this, just give it what you can give it. That's all you can do. Cause they would, you know, they train for, cause I have the kind of kids that have to prepare for it. They're the ones that just go, it's part of their routine. They just go out and run the PRT and they don't look back. But my kids would prepare for it and stay in shape for it and stuff because they knew it was coming. So, and I was out with some girlfriends and fans of the family when Dylan called me and let me know that Duke had collapsed. And not the call you ever thought you were going to get, not the call you ever want to get, and you would never wish it on anybody else. And it happened so fast, and yet it happened so slow. And, you know, we just came on our fourth year. It feels like yesterday sometimes, you know, sometimes it's yesterday, sometimes it was a lifetime ago. But he had collapsed during his PRT, and it took us a while to get all that knowledge. I won't go into a lengthy story about it, but, you know, I made movement immediately, left the venue that we were at and was headed. I was in Dallas. My husband was in Anchorage, and was just trying to get information. And luckily I had a good network of other midshipmen's parents that's kids were in the same class and stuff with Duke and in the same company. And so their kids had called them. So I was kind of getting some information from them as far as that they did start CPR, then ambulance was there. So originally, you know, when you think your kid collapses, you're like, okay, what happened? Is this, you know, you try to run through the scenario. Did he have too much caffeine or is it too hot? Well, it's not too hot. It's in February. So you start trying to play this. Okay, collapsing's bad, but it's not, you know, this is not the end of the world. We got to get more details. And the long story, the long side of a short story or the short side of a long story, I don't know which it is that they were unable to ever get him back. And he died of sudden cardiac death while running the PRT in spite of intervention and in spite of everything that they did. There were, you know, there was somebody on site immediately. And they immediately, Dylan was with him, Jake was with him. You know, we flew in from Dallas and Anchorage, but he had passed away before I even, they had called the code and the Rundle Medical Center even before I even got on the airplane to leave. So I knew before I even left that he hadn't made it. So, I'm a cardiac nurse. I should probably tell you that I have 20 something years in the ICU and cardiac, and you just cannot believe that this, you didn't see this. And so, the Naval Academy and Vice Admiral Sean Buck, of course, you know, and they took my boys into Walter Reed, and they took us into Walter Reed, and they wanted to examine my other children just to make sure this wasn't something that they couldn't, that was genetic, or was it something that they should have seen. And I remember asking them, Dr. Mark Hagney, I said, well, what did his EKG show when he did his DODMERB? And he's like, oh, you know, we haven't done 12 lead EKGs on these in the military since 2002. And I literally was like, what? And it's not something, I mean, you would think, I guess it was one of those things, especially my husband's a pilot and he gets 12 leads every 6 months and stuff. And you just think they would have done it. Like, right, you just didn't know they did it because they're not going to give you all the information. They're just going to tell you they did it and everything was fine. And to hear that, I remember just, oh my gosh, why are they not? And being an ICU nurse and a critical care nurse and a cardiac nurse, EKG is the easiest thing in the entire world to do, to perhaps somebody interpret. And after that happened, and we had so much support from the people at the Naval Academy and Sean Buck, Vice Admiral Sean Buck, Dr. Adam Saperstein, and then Dr. Mark Hagney from Walter Reed Medical Center in Bethesda. Of course, they had the boys checked out, and they were absolutely fine. And they actually did some follow up with them, and they kind of got to the point where they're like, "We don't know why this happened. We'll probably never know." But at this point, they were
when you worked toward instituting that EKG, which Cabrina's son received at the beginning of Pleat Summer.
Right. And so let me tell you straight out of the bat, I had nothing to do with it, honestly. I know you cannot give me any credit because I was not in a place that it even entered my mind that this is something that had to be done, other than I remember, and it wasn't that long ago, that Dr. Mark Hagney from Walter Reed and Dr. Saperstein, who still keeps in touch with me regularly, gave me some updates on what was happening and stuff. But Vice Admiral Buck was the one that said this, you know, they had three in 1 year. So in 2020, they had three sudden cardiac events. Two people obviously passed away, Duke and the other young man, and then one actually survived.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, obviously the Naval Academy, it hit him hard in the face at one time, and it hit him hard in the heart. And luckily, Superintendent Buck said, you know, we have to figure out what's going on here. And what he did is he actually requested Dr. Hagney and Dr. Saperstein to do a universal cardiac screening. And he said, you've got to come up with some kind of initiative to start screening the incoming plebes. And so they started a project, and obviously there's a lot more people that were involved,
right,
with them, but they actually started the project, and they started it with the class of 2021 for the incoming plebes. Mm-hmm. And then they expanded that initiative to all mids at the United States Naval Academy in the classes in the year, academic year of 21 and 22.
Okay.
And then they expanded that to all three Department of Defense service academies, and they got a congressional directive for that, and they started that in the academic year of 22 and 23. Okay. And so all of that information then was sent back to Congress and sent back through initiatives, and that's where this starting off point happened. And they kept in touch with me, and through, I heard just the tail end of her, what she said about, I know that there were several. I mean, I was actually sent all the numbers, and I can tell you without, I don't know what I'm supposed to share or not share, but there were a lot of kids. When I say a lot, if you identify one, that's was too many, right? Yeah. So they identified, you know, a good couple handfuls of kids that some, I remember him texting me at one point saying, you know, Duke saved a life. He absolutely saved two lives today that would have not survived had we not caught this. And he and Dr. Saperstein and Dr. Hagney have been so kind, and it's something that I think that they both had in their genetics, that in their minds, that they've always felt a need for. And I was reading some of this information that I thought was so, when I was preparing for this, and they were talking about, you know, tactical athletes and the military, the people that are joining the military, and that sudden cardiac death is the leading cause of non-traumatic deaths among young military members.
Wow.
And that's
incredible. Crazy,
right? And the reason they stopped it in 2002, they had an extremely high false positive rate.
Okay.
And a very low incident of sudden cardiac death. Okay. So they stopped it, I guess, in 2002, we were deciding that, you know, they weighed the cost and the benefit and decided that it wasn't doing what they needed it to do. So they stopped it in 2002. Well, then in the last two decades, there's been great improvements in EKG interpretation, and specifically going towards athletes and military people. Okay. And so that's when the false positive rate dropped to like under 2%. And so that's what they presented and said, you know, and they actually presented all the information from the United States Naval Academy, from West Point, you know, from all, you know, the Air Force Academy, and said, look at all these people we've identified. Look how cheap this was. And this is what they did. One of the interesting things that had to happen is it had to go to this is another, you know, when you and I've talked about this before, you uh-huh. people are like angels fall in, you know, you meet people that you didn't know you were supposed to meet. But there's a group called the Lionheartsheroes.org. Uh-huh. And way before
Lionheartheroes.org?
Yes.
Okay.
Lionheartheroes.org. And the mom's name is Laura Finlinson. And she, way before this ever happened to Duke, in 2013, it happened to her son. And he collapsed.
Was he a plebe in 2013? Because we lost in 2013.
No, this one was, he was just in the military. I think he was enlisted. Okay. And he was on a 5-mile run in his battalion in Hawaii. He was 25-year-old, perfect health. And died at 7 cardiac. So she is just a angel on earth. And she has I've spent a lot of time talking to her in the past, but it became her goal. I think we all do different things when this happens. That was her mission. And originally they wanted to make sure people had AEDs. And I think the EKG kind of came in too, when all you started seeing all these athletes as well, you know, and high school athletes.
That's what happened to Cabrina's son, because he was an athlete, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then he would be running, and he wouldn't feel quite right. Or can you tell Jennifer a little bit about?
He would say he felt so anxious, like at times, and I'd just be like, okay, we'll just kind of, you know, walk it off. And you know, did you drink any caffeine? You know, have you been drinking Monsters or anything like that? I'd ask him. He's like, no, I just don't feel, right. And I was like, well, just stretch, drink some more water, you know, because I'm not thinking, not once did I think anything cardiac at all.
Well, and even the look back for us, you know, we went, you spend an enormous amount of time over 4 years, especially the first year, on the look back, right? What did mm-hmm. I miss? Yeah. What did I not see? What did I not hear? What did I not pay attention to? And, you know, like I said, running was never fun. It was always hard. I'm like, was it harder than I thought? Like, did he just not share that with me? And I remember talking to his brothers and his roommates, and they're like, okay, we slept 1 foot from him. If he would have told us, we would have made him get, you know, somebody to look into it. But, you know, they're so protective of their health at that point, as far as letting other people know when something's wrong. They don't want to interfere with their career. They don't want to interfere with, you know, they don't want somebody to start looking at them and thinking something's wrong with them when they're not. They don't want to be that person that stands out. They don't want to be the person that gets, you know, everybody starts talking about. So they're very close knit with stuff. So it's, that's why I'm so glad that they started doing those screenings, because it takes it out of their hands for these kids that may not be saying anything, and that you know, not want to be the ones to raise their hand and go, this doesn't feel right. I feel like my heart's racing more than it should, or this doesn't, you know, what, something's going on, but I don't want to say anything because I don't want to get kicked out of the Navy, or I don't want to do any of these things. And so that is one of the, another good reason, I think, that to do it on the screening. And because it's so cheap and it can save so many lives and it's so easy to do. Where they are with it now is they had to go through to the, and I always, the National Defense Authorization Act. Uh-huh. And that's part of what the Lion Heart Heroes does. And they were able to get it signed by President Biden on December 22nd, 2023, that it's going to be in the fiscal year 2024.
And so do they almost have to renew it every year?
Yes.
That's something that you have to.
Yeah. So, and it's been.
Oh, it would be good for parents, for example, Cabrina, to put their energy into working to make sure that happens. Right.
Right. And right now it's set up as just a pilot program still, right, where they're screening. And it shouldn't be just for service academies. It should be for all military personnel. It should be for anyone that's entering the military. And that's what they're focusing on. Well, that it's not just, you know, service academies, obviously. And they spend an enormous amount of time lobbying and going, you know, meeting with senators and congressmen and sending letters and writing. And they just, it's impressive. I forget what her background is, but it is not that. It's something like me, like, oh, I'm like nothing. And here I'm doing all this. So she's pretty incredible. But we are glad that it's going to be, I think when I talked to Dr. Saperstein about all of it, he was saying, you know, it's more of a logistics thing, because they do those entrance exams and those physicals and stuff at so many centers across the United States. Mm-hmm. And so many different kinds of places and stuff. And it's streamlining all of that and figuring out how to do it. But
okay.
They and are doing.
Sabrina, your son got it at the academy, right? As a part of,
he got it. His plebe. I was thinking that he would have already, like, when he was up at NAPS, been tested, but they didn't even do anything at NAPS to test them either physically. And he didn't have to do it before he got into, you know, the physical part of the application that we had to do. It was just the plebe summers when they did the EKG.
Okay.
Yeah, because they didn't do, you know, they obviously Duke went to NAPS too, and they did nothing there either. But I'm excited. I mean, they like I said, they keep me informed and they send me stuff, and like, I can't take any credit. The only credit I had was raising a kid that was awesome, and I loved him, and he was doing what he was supposed to do and was where he was supposed to be. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And at least I can, and it's such a cliche, you know, like, something good came out of this, you know. And I know that sounds a cliche that I can probably say now, which I probably couldn't have even said before. I'm like, I don't want something good to come out of this, but I'm so honored that people say his name, and that when they, you know, he actually was speaking to the doctor a couple days ago in a text, and he's like, can I talk about Duke? I'm presenting to Congress, presenting in the Senate, and can we talk about Duke? And I'm like, absolutely. I'm like, any day that somebody says his name is a good day. And if it was this that happened that causes no one else to have to go through this, or one less person go through it, or 1,000 less people go through what we went through, I would have taken it. And, you know, that's what I'm going to have to hold on to, because I would have taken it in a heartbeat. Right. And well, I think
Cabrina's son is definitely one of them. And Cabrina, you said about 10 of them in his class.
That's what they shared, that he wasn't the only one.
Okay. Yeah. There were quite a few, you know, to me, 10 is a lot.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, quite a few to me. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I wanted to connect you two, because Duke, I think, had a big part to play in Cabrina's son having been diagnosed, and then others, this class plus the previous classes. So I just wanted to connect the two of you.
Absolutely. And it makes me happy now. When I hear the successful side of it, it, mm-hmm, you know, it really does bring me a level of joy to know that that you know, nobody wants to find out bad information, but man, to have the knowledge and to know you can intervene, it's just, I would have given anything for that. And naively probably thought that it was already kind of being done, you know, they're in the safest place they could probably be.
Yeah.
They've been out, they're healthy individuals, they're all young athletes, and you just kind of got sideswiped by it, you know. So I find it very exciting. I think they're going to continue to kind of get to this where it's just going back to like 2002, and that's just what they do. Whether you're, you know, enlisted, whether you're an officer, you have an EKG.
For me, it's
DuCreolFoundation.org. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time saying these .orgs. So it's actually not Lionhearted. It's LionHeartHeroes.org. Okay.
LionHeartHeroes.org.
Yeah.
And maybe parents can find out how they can help and get involved as well. And maybe Cabrina.
I would like to try to get our schools to start doing the sports physical EKGs. Like, I think that should be part of it. Because when they go in for a sports physical, they're just like, okay, do you feel okay? You feel like you're going to do? You're good? You know, we'll just listen to your heart a little bit. Okay, everything's good. I mean, it was just like the quickest. And then I started asking the doctors. I said, you know, Carlos got diagnosed, you know, with Parkinson. You think maybe we have to check out his sisters and see if, you know, anything's kind of going on here, you know, maybe do a quick little EKG real quick. And they're just like, well, we never even thought about that. I said, sports physicals need to have this. And then I started telling the whole story and stuff behind what had happened. I said, we could probably help, you know, and I was trying to figure out how I can push it. And I'm talking to people to push it.
They have several organizations. And if you actually reach out to this Lori Finlinson, when we first started talking years back, there's a whole group of people that's literally what they do, is they lobby and they go and they get these schools to where they mandate that they have to have these sports physicals with EKGs. And she has a wealth of knowledge and she loves to share. And I know that I have links somewhere in all of my information on all these different kinds of organizations. A lot of them are named, unfortunately, after young men like Duke and other people that fell to sudden cardiac arrest. But they have, I'm just telling you, if I were you, that's what
yeah, I would go with somebody
that's already done it.
I can connect you to, and Jennifer, maybe you can invite her and share the links with her.
Absolutely.
Okay. Then I'll connect the two of you, and I look forward to hearing the work that you all continue to do for our young people.
Absolutely. And thank you so much. And thank you for, you know, giving her a platform to speak about her child and her experience, and always giving me a platform to come in and say a few things about my
really son.
Well, we love you and we love both of you. But the other day I was wearing Duke's t-shirt, the ones you sent me, and somebody said, oh, that's such a cool t-shirt. So I got a chance to talk about him. So
you're like, hey, hit her up. She'll probably send you one. Well, I'm actually really excited because I told you that Dylan is starting his PA training and Jake is finally starting his primary or his knife. We actually are changing our focus at the DuCreel Foundation now that we've been in business for 4 years into focusing on flying. So this is our first year. We're going to be offering a Fly for Duke private pilot scholarship. So we started out with a kind of general academic scholarships, was really just to start building the foundation and start giving money away, because we were collecting money. So we wanted to give money away. So we were doing academic scholarships, but we are now centering our focus to where we're going to focus 100% on the Fly for Duke portion of the scholarship at the foundation. So we're really excited about that. We're going to be giving one out. We're reviewing all the applications as you speak. So
that's exciting. So is that for regular, or that's not for Navy? That's for regular.
It is for people that want to get into aviation that maybe don't know how. It comes with a mentoring program as well.
Okay.
And so we'll see. That's what Duke wanted to do, was fly. And he would be so excited to have his name attached to anybody that was doing something that he wanted to do. So I think that's a good thing.
Well, thanks so much for joining us and
thank you.
Sharing your time and your story, and for connecting with Cabrina. And you're connected now.
We are. Well, it's nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you too.
And thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
For your time and for sharing your experience. And I look forward to hearing more about your son as he moves through the academy.